This is CliffCentral.com.
Lex Leo is sitting here with me. Look at you, huh? Look at you. I was just going through in my mind all the things that you've done, all the things that you do. I mean, you know, well, come on, you do most of them pretty well, if you ask me. You got some music that we'll talk about in a second. Skateboarder, dental surgeon. You fit grills for the stars.
Mm-hmm. When are you coming for your grill?
No.
Now that your smile's all
are
done.
Are you mad?
Your smile's all ready and done. Time for grill.
A grill. Do you know how stupid I would look with a grill?
Them black and yellow.
Oh, for God's sake. Horrendous idea. But I have seen your handiwork on some of South Africa's celebrities, and I've got to tell you, man, you know what you're doing. That's why I'm so impressed
with
you.
You've got such
a lot going on, and you still manage to do a whole lot of good as well. I follow you on Instagram and I see you,
thank you,
going around all over South Africa. You spend your weekends, the time that most of us would spend being a bit selfish, you spend that time trying to make things better. You go into communities, you help them along, whether it's with, you know, just giving them a bit of your time, whether it's helping them to improve their own lives, learn things.
You know, that's something that I was very fortunate to grow up with, but I don't think it's anything special and unique to me as an individual. I think everyone is able to do that. It's like you dig a little bit deep within yourself and you find your ability to make someone else happy or serve humanity in some unique way. When you realize you can do that, and that's actually what really, I think, sustains us, then you do it more and more. And then it seems like click, 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 everything else seems to fit into place.
Yeah, but you're speaking as an evolved creature. I mean, I do have to say a lot of people are in survival mode, you know. They live from, and you meet a lot of these people and you try to help them out of survival mode so that they can start to find meaning in life, and then they can start giving back as well, because it pays
right
forward. It creates a chain reaction. But a lot of people are just like, oh my God, I'm hungry. Oh my God, I'm thirsty. Oh my God, I'm desperate. They don't have a chance to think of anyone else because they're so caught up in this world of like, just make it through today.
And do we blame them? No, we don't blame them.
Mm-mm.
And I think then what is important is to be conscious that if you've been afforded the blessing of having a little bit of mental time to not feel hungry and thirsty, and say, okay, I've recently had a meal, I recently drank something, and I'm actually okay. How can I use that to get someone else to that level? If you've been afforded that opportunity in any way, whether it's economically or spiritually or socially or intellectually or whatever it is, it's like it's treason if you don't use that to uplift others. So I think I was just really lucky because of the upbringing my parents gave me and our siblings, focused on use your time, your effort, your resources, your abilities, your talents to uplift those around you.
So the source of that, because you know, your story is really interesting to me. Your parents are Persian.
Yes.
And they moved to the UK and then they came to South Africa. They made a decision to come to South Africa because they realized this is where they could do the most good.
Yes.
Now, that's an incredible thing because most people would just go to a place where they can do the most good for them.
Yes.
So they brought you and your siblings here.
No, I was born here. We were born here.
You were born here.
Yeah.
So you're South African born.
Yes.
But your parents wanted you to be in this country. They wanted you to contribute to this country.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful. I really am. And I've traveled to so many different countries, and everywhere it has this beauty, but this is such a special country.
Tell me why, because we often, you know, if you are in it, you sometimes are not of it. You sometimes don't understand what it looks like from the outside, and you hear people saying these things, but you're not always sure what they mean.
So I think it depends on what you value in life. Some people might value personal comfort only, and that's what they search for, which... If you want to come to South Africa and have personal comfort, you need to lock yourself within, for example, an estate.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can get your personal comfort here. If you're looking for somewhere that has, I don't know, good healthcare, good access for everyone to education, this is not the place, right?
Yeah.
This isn't the place. What this is definitely the place for is the most beautiful amount of diversity and potential and opportunities for service. So I really value service. It's a very important part of my life. And when I say service, you're helping others in whatever way, right? I really, that's my currency, really. So
now, when you say that, though, is that coming from a place of the way you were raised? Is it coming
from?
Is it so the way you were raised? Is it also a spiritual thing in terms of what it means? And I know you're Baha'i, and part of that
definitely.
So all of this marries together to make you
very
who you
much
are.
So. So how I was raised is one thing. I was raised with the principles of the Baha'i faith, which say we are all one, we are all equal. There should not be prejudice with gender. There should not be prejudice with culture. We are all from one common source, and we have a purpose, which is to love one another and strive for the better, which I think is common to many people's hearts, even though they don't put a label on it.
Oh, yeah, and even people who are not necessarily acolytes of a specific religion, and
Correct.
Even people whose religions don't prioritize that, I think they know deep down inside
exactly.
there's a common humanity. We do want human beings to be happier. We want to try to spread good where we can.
Exactly.
You know, I don't think anyone wakes up in the morning, even what we would call evil people wake up in the morning going, today I'm going to do as much evil, like a villain in a cartoon.
Which is only in response to somebody hurting them, frustrating them. It's not like it's a natural thing. And so, unfortunately, religion has been so badly misplaced in today's society. So forget about the name religion. It's like, what do you feel? What do you feel inside? You know. So I grew up with those principles. And not only did I grow up with it being told to me, but I grew up with an example in front of me. So my mother passed away 4 years ago and really gave her life for service. It was constant example. She never worked for money. Like since I was born, she just did volunteer work. And my father, still up to today, way more than me, has such an amazing concept of giving himself, and that's the purpose of his life, that I always see it in front of me. So that was easy. I didn't have a bad example in front of me. And so that's why I say I'm very lucky. I'm lucky that I had parents.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I was able to get an education. We speak about privilege. This is definitely privilege. And now the bad part is if I don't use it to help. You cannot change
Correct.
The way, you know? Yeah. You cannot change that you were afforded
like
a privilege.
Someone can do nothing about the fact that they were born with nothing.
Correct.
But they can improve
their lives after that. And you can then grow in some way or contribute in some way or reach some level of consciousness. So everything is tied in with, okay, how can I use what I've been given, talents or abilities, to not just help me move forward and learn in this life, but others around me at the same time?
But you do acknowledge that that's a generosity of spirit that a lot of people maybe it may be possible for them to tap into, but most people just don't get to that. And I'm not being glib
most
about
people
this.
Don't.
Like, it's an unfortunate reality that a lot of people are, you know, they pat themselves on the back if they give some guy at the traffic lights some money and they think they've done a good deed for the day. And as much as that's not insignificant, there are other things and other ways and other thoughts that you can have in your head that can start to move you forward on that generosity.
Only if people have been informed. Only if people have been educated. So, for example, I'm fortunate to be here in the studio speaking with you because I was invited. If I was never invited, I didn't know the address, I was not told how to get here or the time I should be here, I'm going to miss it. And this is why education is so important. Holistic education. I'm not just speaking about like intellectual education, but emotional education, spiritual education. And education just means sharing your experience and your knowledge with others. You went and started this institution, if I can call it an institution.
It's a madhouse. Yeah.
Madhouse.
Yes.
You had a lot of experience. I remember listening to you before this came about on radios, and I always used to listen and be like, yeah, what a on the ball DJ. What a good presenter. What an intellectual. What a not scared of the reality. I'd always see this. And so this is a natural evolution of you, because you were just in you're in a bubble and you need to break out. And now it allows you then to educate people on certain realities.
And to bring other people on board and give them an opportunity to do their thing. And I get that. And that's been very satisfying to me. Because you realize once you start thinking that way, how much more you get once you give. Right?
Exactly.
So I see when you're doing this and I know that you're one of the few people on social media that when you do this stuff, you're not doing it for virtue points. Because who wants to go to some dusty place on a Saturday or Sunday morning, spend the entire day around people who might not even speak your language? You do this. It's amazing. And you've got a 9-to-5 during the week. You're now also a music producer. We're going to talk about your music in a second. You're a musician, you're a recording artist. But I'm interested in the maxillofacial prosthetics, prosthodontics,
situation.
Dentistry, because you've built up a practice there which is, it's just got an incredible reputation.
I'm very lucky to be.
And you lecture in dentistry
at Wits.
Yeah.
So there comes in where education is important, taking my experience. And so I definitely wanted to be able to help students.
Is that where it started?
Yeah. So in terms of my dentistry, I graduated in 2010.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I graduated in a way that I had options. So I got the awards that I wanted. And so I wasn't in a position of, I didn't have to be forced to take a job that is not the nice side of dentistry. And when I say that, we have dentists who, unfortunately, their reality is from 7 to 7, they've got a line outside of people who just need to get their teeth pulled.
Yeah.
Right? And it's rough. You don't have time to be nice with the patient. You don't have time to
And you're talking about in places where there are not a lot of resources.
Especially our rural areas. Yeah. Especially, right? Okay. And, let's go 3 kilometers outside of
Joburg. Yeah.
Let's just go hop over the road here to Alex.
Yeah.
These are realities,
so
right?
What they have is they've got a room and they've got...
You may or may not have anesthetics.
Some pretty rudimentary tools.
Yeah.
And the people are lining up to have rotten teeth pulled out of their head.
Because majority of our country cannot afford even preventative dentistry, and so wait until the last resort. And the last resort is then to pull it out. And this is why dentistry is so vital. People don't understand. It's not just about teeth. You lose a tooth, okay, 1, 2, 2 teeth. But if your whole life you've been losing teeth, you don't have anything to chew on, you don't have self-confidence, it has implications on your bodily health, all of these things. This is why dentistry is such a valuable profession. So I was fortunate. So... And now again with that opportunity, what am I doing with it? This is why I've started so many free dental programs and dental education programs. This is why these things are important. Because yes, I'm one man with two hands, but I can still do as much as possible to educate.
Mm.
And starting mobile clinics and encouraging the students to make sure that their dental life is balanced between private and public. Mm. And not even private and public. Private, public, and then volunteer. Not even the people who can get to public sector.
So it gives you an opportunity, too, to get them into this cycle of generosity that,
correct.
That
it's
you
really
feel
important.
Humans need to be in. But for you, it was also science. It also, you were drawn to it. You were obviously good at it. You obviously had the mental acuity to be able to. It's not difficult. I mean, it's not hard.
I didn't even know what I wanted to study after matric.
It's well near impossible because dentists are... very specialized people.
Yeah.
These are not people who just, you know, if you screw up, this is in someone's head.
Yeah.
It's the most sensitive part of their anatomy.
Exactly.
If you get an infection and it spreads a little bit further than it should, you could get really serious problems. And people don't realize
throat.
That. They just think it's the mouth.
Yeah. They just think it's the teeth.
And, the worst that can happen is I'll eat everything through a straw. But humans die of their teeth.
Yeah.
Right?
People can, really. It has implications on your heart. It can
and
your
they
brain.
Also they also make the mistake of thinking, well, it's a cosmetic thing.
Mm.
You know, someone has bad teeth. But actually, if you can't use your teeth effectively, if they're weak, if they're brittle, if they're rotten, if they're crooked... these things can change the course of your life.
100%.
And it's out of your control.
Yeah, for many it's out of their control. Hundreds and thousands. If I look at my DMs, there are so many people suffering all around South Africa. And I'm trying to get people access to clinics and to healthcare and to...
Mm.
And this is, you know, one day I envision, I won't be practicing dentistry, but God willing, I will be on the board of healthcare that has an influence on how... the country's rollout of primary health care is done. And then I can start influencing that, hopefully. But I graduated and then I did community service in KZN in Ladysmith and in the army, actually, which was a lovely experience. And then I came back and I started practice and then I went and started my master's degree. My master's was really important because I had wanted to specialize further and I needed a master's degree to even maybe think about getting accepted. And then I started my master's and then it helped because as I was doing my master's, I was starting to lecture. And then I was like, I need to finish this degree because I have to be an example to my students about academia.
Yeah.
And then I did that. And then I decided I didn't want to specialize anymore. So after my master's, I was like, no, I don't want to specialize anymore because I'd use another 4 years strictly for dentistry after my 2.5 years of master's. At that point, I was like, why do I want to specialize? What is it that I'm seeking? What in my brain wants to grow more? And I was like, okay, I've really done a lot of dentistry expression of my creativity. And I'm doing more and more now. And every day in practice, I get better and better and better. But then I was like, I don't want to go and use 4 more years only to be further specialized. Instead of trying to specialize into one point, I like to spread and make each of those little avenues stronger. So I know in future, I want to go into industrial design. I want to be an industrial designer, inventor. My creative side really wants to grow. And it's limited within dentistry, and it's limited within jewelry, and limited within music. But these are all expressions of my creativity.
See, there used to be a term for people like this, and it was
used.
No, polymath. There are people who, and they were regarded in the ancient world as, and in the Renaissance as being the people who, they, you know, you call them genius or whatever, but effectively they were people who were interested in all kinds of things. They weren't going to be siloed into one career their whole life long, because I don't know any other music dentist overlaps. I don't. Do you?
Apparently, there's an artist called Dr. Sid in Nigeria. He doesn't practice, but he studied or was.
I think you might be the only one who's doing both.
Perhaps.
And you can do all of them, right?
You can.
Because people will say to you, a jack of all trades. Mm. And I hate that. Because
they say jack of all trades, then they finish it with master of none. I don't like the end part.
No, but even jack of all trades is kind of, you did a master's in dentistry, a master of dentistry. You've got the fucking certificate to prove it. Then you're a musician. You've just released your first commercial single, Bafun Ukwazi.
Yeah, Bafun Ukwazi.
Right? And this is in a language, it wasn't your first language as well.
Correct.
So you love language, you love music, you love
yes.
you love science, you love dentistry, you love skateboarding, you love helping people. You're a spiritual kind of guy. You're a polymath.
Great, I'll take it.
It's good. Put that on your business card.
Polymath.
But it frightens some people because they think, oh, well, he doesn't do any of those things well, which is very insulting.
And that's why you have to show them that
you're
doing it well. You have to show, you know, all of this stemmed, you know, when I was trying to decide what to study. So I finished matric and I was really good at biology and physiology and I was really good at art.
Hmm.
And I had these and I was like,
and
what
they
am
pull
I
you
do?
In different directions.
They do. Yeah. Society tells you they pull you in different directions.
They say, you've got to go into this
then
channel.
It's like, am I going to do architecture? Am I going to do medicine? Am I going to... I was involved with... I think that's when we first met. I was involved in this marketing company called HDI for a few years and I was their... chairman of the board of their marketing, the junior marketing. And I had this marketing side and it's always involved with business. I'm like, what am I going to do? And at the time, my basic decision was, okay, my parents said to me, you have to go and do something that where you can use your talents to serve humanity. They didn't tell me anything about what profession. And at all. They didn't say you must do this.
Can I just say that that's a tremendous gift?
Yeah, it really is.
First of all, you're a gifted guy because you could do any of these things, which is tremendous. Mm. But then the fact that your parents freed you to make that decision with the only proviso being do good for the rest of humanity.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What a great guideline to... You got such wide parameters there.
Mm.
I mean, I just love the way your parents put you into that
and
situation.
And then I was like, Lord, no, I don't like to read. Then I was like, accounting, no, I'm not good at math. I did it like this, very basic.
You just threw out a few
like
things.
Like superficial things. I'm like, there's no ways. And if I knew how much you have to read in dentistry, I probably wouldn't have done it. But that was it. So what did I do? I went and did a year of volunteer work because I still couldn't decide at the end of my trick. I went to Greece, and the reason I went to Greece was I went to work with this NGO called Yatri to Kosmo, which is Doctors of the World. Yeah. Right? And I just went to volunteer because Greece is the door to Europe for refugees. You know when I say I went to Greece, everyone's like, oh, you went to Mykonos? No, I went in the city center of Athens, and I worked with refugees for the whole year. Mm. Right? But what that did is it opened my eyes a lot at age 17, 18 to the realities
of
the world.
You wouldn't be the first Persian to go to Greece, yeah. Either. They all came in with weapons the last time. Didn't you guys win?
Didn't we already learn?
I think you won. All right, yeah. So
then I went there, and it's on that year. I needed to apply by October of that year for what I wanted to study. By July, I still didn't know. I had gone, really try to investigate. And I was working with, I don't know, different doctors and dentists and social workers and psychologists. And I was even doing translation for the Afghani and the Persian refugees. Like, and I was just exposed to a crazy amount of things.
So you did that. You speak Farsi. Right?
I speak Farsi, yeah. And I learned Greek on that year. Mm-hmm. And I forgot a lot of it, but I retained some.
Sure.
And then what happened is I met a dentist. And she was really positive. I was like, what am I going to study? I was like, let me do something medical because I can always do art and creativity on the side of medical, but not the other way around. That's how I felt at the time. I was like, I can't be an architect and then go into a medical thing. I can't be, but I can do it the other way.
Yeah.
I felt that was possible. So then I met a dentist and she's like, oh, dentistry is lovely and this and that. And all I knew at the time was I need to be able to help people and I know I'm very good with my hands. I'm good with little detail. Mm. That's all I knew. I was like, okay, cool. Let me do dentistry. Everyone's got a smile. Everyone needs a dentist. You can practice anywhere in the world. It's good that you can bring primary health care to a country like ours with such extremes of wealth and poverty. And I was like, okay, I'll apply for dentistry. This was it.
Wow.
And then I got in and then I started that next year. And what was interesting is that in my first class of my first year, our professor, Professor Veres, who I absolutely love, and I lecture alongside her now, and she's in her mid-70s already and she's still going so strong. By the way, she was the first female graduate of her class ever in dentistry. So she's a really strong character, right? And so basically what happened is she asked everyone to put up their hands and said, who of you did art at high school? Remember, I did really well. I got the art award at high school. I really loved
it. You didn't expect that question in a dentistry class.
Yeah. And from everyone in the class, I was the only one who did art at high school. Only one person. Everyone was very much like maths and science geniuses, which I wasn't. And she said, which she probably shouldn't have said now that I think of it as a lecturer, she said, the rest of you shouldn't be doing dentistry. Which I don't know. But I saw the result. Every year I got first in my class for practical and for theory.
What is that about? Is that an aesthetic eye?
It's an aesthetic eye. It's ability to connect with your patient on a different level.
Someone showed me something the other day. They showed me a picture of Tom Cruise and
his midline is.
His midline isn't right.
No, it's not.
But everybody thinks he's so attractive. Now, what is that? What's that all about?
Explain that to me
as an aesthete and as a dentist.
It's the ability to see detail. I mean, when they were restoring his teeth, he obviously had a situation where they weren't able to shift the midline anymore, and that's the best result he could have got.
Mm.
But it's fine. It works for him. So whatever.
But we don't notice unless someone points it out.
So, but if you cannot in dentistry see shape, color, size, translucency, harmony with the face, if you don't look at things and you can see the positive and the negative behind it and these types of things and think out of the box and creatively, it makes it a very difficult profession and it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have those characteristics, it becomes very enjoyable. And so I did this and go throughout the years. It's like, oh, now I want to do cleft palate surgery and then I want to go into prosthetics and then I want to actually only work with children. And all of these things, I went through all these avenues. And then I graduated. And I graduated from WITS very confidently. My lecturers were very happy with me. My marks showed that I knew what I was talking about. And I started this journey. Even this whole thing about Dr. Smile and the celebrity dentistry didn't exist. It first was Dr. Smile as a community dentist. When I was in the army, I went to surrounding schools and I did free dentistry for the community. That's where I got the name Dr. Smile. And then I registered it. And then I came back to Josie and I started in private practice. And that's when this whole celebrity side also started. Yeah. But it goes hand in hand.
Sure.
Where do I get the money from to do all this free dentistry? Where do I get it from? It comes from private practice. It comes from the other things that I do. So everything ties in together.
But it's interesting because a lot of people would say, oh, well, I'll only get to that stuff when I'm making tons of money. Mm. You got to do it throughout, right? And the money comes.
The money will come.
Somehow it comes.
Yeah, exactly. Somehow.
The music, how do you integrate that in? I mean, I'm trying to imagine like in your head while you're busy doing some complicated dental procedure and you've got a song in your head, right?
Yeah, always. No, but I mean, my patients are really used to it.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, my dentist's singing. I don't know. I hope he's concentrating on my mouth.
Well, what happens, I was doing a procedure yesterday and I was just so relaxed and my patient fell asleep. She was so relaxed. And so I'm constantly always either singing or rapping. Mm-hmm. And I have a screen here on the ceiling, a TV screen and another screen in front of you. And I always ask my patients, what would they like to listen to or watch? Either you come in my practice and you'd like to watch a cooking show or a documentary, listen to Cliff Central, let YouTube just go, go on whatever, right? And patients will choose certain songs or they say to me, it's up to me. And then they relax. And, you know, when you're doing something creative that you enjoy, it puts your mind at ease. It doesn't stress you out. And so I'm always rapping, singing, and my patients really enjoy it. Funnily enough, But that they know they're going to get that when they come to me anyway.
Yeah.
It's part of it. But where did the music come from? You know, on that year, I've always liked music. I remember when I was like 9, 10, I used to have a little tape recorder and I would sit with my tape and I'd record songs that I like and write out the lyrics. Why I write out the lyrics? I look at it now. Why would I write out the lyrics? I learned all the lyrics for pop songs, for rap songs, for everything. And then I really enjoyed singing. And as a combo of like essentially, when I was very young, as a combo of like Eminem and Backstreet Boys. Huh. I remember consciously loving both these, or this group and this artist. And I learned a lot of things. So I like singing, I like rapping, and I grew up with this, right? And then when I was about 14, 15, I became very conscious of my local music. And then I started loving it. And I started listening to YFM a lot. And I'd always go to the YFM concerts and listen. And then I got exposed to local music. And I was still this 15-year-old Persian boy. What does Persian even mean to people? They don't know, you know? Yeah. But because I grew up so locally and my parents emphasized the importance of if you live in this country, you must make sure you understand and grow up locally. Don't be in a bubble. Don't be oblivious of the reality. So when my parents first moved here, they lived in a township for 2 years. They didn't move to the Burbs. They lived in Mututlung.
You were the only Persians there for sure, right?
Yeah. So even for me, like people think like my concept of like Kasi life, why am I always there? I'm very comfortable with it.
That's where you grew up.
It's not something scary to me. It's not something foreign to me.
And it's not something fake.
It's not something fake either.
See, because that's what people always, they always jump on that one.
They will jump.
You know, how dare you appropriate culture?
Even with Bafunukwas, people are taking that line, but it's only the people who don't know me.
Yeah,
and I cannot wait for the music video to come out. Then it's going to really make people question. But when people get exposed to me and they understand that even the work that I do, it's constant. It's not a once off. It's not unfortunately a once a year for 67 minutes thing that has brainwashed many people. Unfortunately, no bash on the 67 minutes because it's a great start.
Yeah, sure, of course.
But if people think that's the limit of their capacity, they're mistaken. So. This is all very real to me, and I'm trying to show that we as a country have progressed, and as individuals, we don't have the limitations that society has put on us in terms of race or culture or language or barriers. And I want to be an opportunity for people to see that difference. And I will be, and I have been.
So your influences in music, just to focus on that for a second, that comes from being in the township when you were young. And then obviously from immersing yourself in culture and discovering a liking for and a talent for a certain kind of music. It's like anyone else.
I mean, when I was 15, Elvis
didn't grow up with black people, but he certainly knew black music.
Yeah, but you expose yourself to culture and then you say, okay. I mean, when I was 14, 15 and I was the only non-black person at a 10,000 crowd YFM party. Mm. What was I doing there? Who was I listening to? I was listening to Squad. I was listening to Pitch Black Afro. I was listening to like Unati and Zola. I was exposed to I don't know, Lebo Matosa. And I was exposed to these at a very young age. And then because I had black friends, but real friends.
Yeah.
Like people think it's a joke. But no, okay, so when I was in high school, I was catching taxis home also. I wasn't getting my parents to fetch me.
But you know what people are like. They project themselves onto you. So what they do is they say, he can't be real because I'm fake, which is a horrible way to exist.
I have a funny story. When I was 14, yeah. I was sent home from high school because I'd gone to town and I got cornrows. I got braids in my hair. And then they sent me home. And my school was predominantly like colored black, high school. And they sent me home and they said, you're not ethnic. This is what they said. They said, you're not ethnic. I was like, what? And then I went home, I was crying. And I had to take these things out.
What did your mother say?
She said, ignore them. They don't know what they're talking about. Like this. Yeah. Because my parents are not confrontational. She may have said something to the school, I don't know, but.
But she didn't make you feel bad.
No, not at
and
all.
She
or that I was wrong. She supported.
Yeah.
She let me go. Like, I had gone to work. Then one of the ladies who worked with her, who we still are really close with their family, she just took us to town. We were two little kids, me and my sister, and then we got our hair braided there on the side of the street and then went like anyone else.
Right.
So I'm very aware this is not common. I'm very aware my life is not common.
Yeah.
And it's surprising to people.
That's what I sort of like about
it. But since a very young, I mean, I remember once, I don't know which kasi I was in somewhere. I was 7 years old. And we were walking around. So my parents were having some meeting. The Baha'i community was having a meeting. And this is why. Because the Baha'is are so united that we've been having gatherings and meetings and stuff together,
in
regardless of race.
All kinds of places.
Exactly. Yeah. And so
I drove past a big Baha'i sort of building sort of area, kind of. It's in Randburg?
North Riding. That's the National Baha'i Center is in North Riding.
Okay, is that what
But, you know, if you look at South Africa has more Tswana, Zulu, Xhosa Baha'is than anything else.
Yeah.
Because it's South Africa.
Well, of course, 80% of our population.
Right, so I grew up like that. And we were somewhere, and my parents said, yeah, go walk around. Not worried about us walking around the township. Go walk around, and we'll see you in a few hours. And then myself and my friend, and he was black, so whatever, we were walking, and then there was this group of men sitting just on crates, drinking beers, normal kasi life. And then one of them saw me, and they shouted, Lehua! So it was obviously a Tswana speaking kasi. And they stood up with knobkiris, and they started chasing me. Right? Which, what else?
Jeez,
I was seven. That was like 1993, right? Mm. And I just ran back. I was crying. I ran back to the house. And then the owners of the house came with me and went and introduced me to those people and said, no, he's with us, family, friends, la, 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 la. And I remember these. I go every single time I go now, still into any kasi, they're like, Mlungu, Lekhuwa. Okay, fine. But it's not about me personally. It's about this, like, what stupid apartheid did to our country and the after effects, which I am now here to try to slowly, slowly, slowly stitch up, patch up, improve.
One person at a time.
Doesn't matter, one person at a time. What we can do is one person at a time.
And you think, I mean, your music is great music, but it's also got a purpose, right? Everything has to have a purpose.
That's why I only started the music now. I could only, like, legitimately start the music when the purpose was clear. Now you're just going to start music for what? Just to be famous or just to make money or just what's the point then, right? When I realize I'm at a stage where I can give it the correct amount of mental time, then all the years of planning and patience then come into fruition. And I say, okay, I met an amazing producer. We have a very good friendship, and that's a very good relationship. And
who's this producer?
His name is AV. He's just a young colored guy out of Cape Town from Athlone, doing amazing stuff because he's making music for the biggest artists in LA. He's not even working with South African artists. He's from this little private little home. He's doing stuff for Chris Brown, Wiz Khalifa, Ty Dolla $ign, and he's very quiet about it and very humble also. And we met under circumstances, and we became really close. Bigger on our connection of the importance of spirituality and service and this and that. And we're just good friends for one another. And then the music relationship started, and all of my lyrics and ideas have started now coming out paired with his production. And Bafunukwaz is the first offering. And we have a lot of different music of different genres. But Bafunukwaz is the first offering because within hip hop, you're able to tell the biggest story lyrically. And it's really important that my first song, people understand what I'm about, who I am, who I'm not. And that's the music video, which...
And that means they want to know, right?
Yeah, it means they want to know. And the music video, I cannot wait. It's going to be out in about 2 weeks. It's already shot and ready. It's just that as an independent artist, you're trying to find which is the best avenue on how to launch.
Yeah, because these days, it's not so clear.
No, it's not so clear. We obviously know that online is a lot stronger. But now, I have to go one by one to the TV stations and say, okay, here you go, here you go, here you go. And does anyone want to drop it first? And what's happening? And
that's a nightmare.
But you start at the bottom. That's fine.
Sure.
I got a line in Bafunukwaz and it says, and I started from bottom, the best place to start, you can only go up. That's really a nice line for me because I remind myself of my own lines every time. And say, okay, don't worry where you start. If you're starting, you can only go
it's
up.
It's almost
where
like a mantra.
Right. Yeah. And so it's content. I took a lot of time really refining what I wanted to say, how I wanted to say, trying to balance what is cool and relevant. And what is unnecessary.
Yeah, but you've also got this fascinating story you can draw on because you don't fit in some ways, and yet you've chosen to fit in, which I think is beautiful. Because you've got this amazing ability to be very different, but also to not make it about you.
You know? It's a bigger picture.
When you go into an environment, I've seen you in this. I saw you at a meeting of dentists once. I don't know why I was there. But I was at this meeting of dentists, and you were there, and you were being very studious, and you were kind of like this exemplary dentist, but you still didn't look like the other dentists.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, well, you know, I think it's an advantage.
As a student, you know, they really tried to box me. In first year, I used to have long hair, right? In first year, they're like, no, you must cut your hair. Dentists don't have long hair. I was like, okay, I have to cut my hair. And then we had to wear shirt and tie every day. as a dentist to Wits University, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. But when I wore shirt and tie, because I was a model at the time also, mine was tailored and skinny and pointy shoes and everything like this. And the head of school would come to me and say, this is not a fashion show. Wear normal pants. I said, what are normal pants? Like, these are black, smart, formal pants. They just look a bit...
I'm going with your rules.
And I said, and my marks are top every year. My marks are top. Maybe you should get other people to wear these pants. If you guys are concerned about the pants, you know? Let's not do that to our students.
Those kind of rules can crush you.
And as it does crush, and it crushes a lot of students. So you have to really have the motivation to know why you're doing this to be able to pull you through. Because university is very difficult. Very, very, very difficult. It's hard enough already with the syllabus, let alone the lifestyle it enforces on you and restrictions and pressure. And so my heart goes out to our students and I try to help them. But university prepares you for life. It's not just about the profession. It prepares you to keep your mouth closed when you know you have to.
Yeah.
It prepares you to speak when you can. It prepares you to develop patience.
Because the real world is a lot more scary than university.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you get it's almost like a soft landing in some ways.
Mm. So those are interesting things. And, you know, I know my students follow me on Instagram. I know they see my diversity.
Mm.
And I appreciate that they're able to respect the boundaries of how they treat me.
So what do you mean by that? Because you've got
patients,
you've seriously, I mean, this is amazing. There's this wide range of people. Mm. You've got students, you've got patients, you've got other professional dentists who are paying attention to you. You've got musicians, you've got your celebrity friends and your celebrity clients. Mm. And somehow you've got to walk this tightrope because some of them are going to go at some point, well, which box do we put him in?
Which is for the first time I'm doing this, so I'm learning also, but like, I see some of my students, Saturday night I'll be at a club 3 a.m. and then I'll see them there, you know?
Yeah.
And now they see me as an artist, not in a suit and tie in front of them.
Yeah.
And they see me and I smile at them, I greet them, and I tell them I'm watching them. And then when I see them on Monday morning, I make sure that their work is up to standard. Because if it's not, they should not be in the club until 4 a.m. if their work is not up to standard.
Exactly.
And I checked their work and I was really impressed with their work. So I was like, enjoy the club.
Yeah,
great. You know, I'm not going to tell you don't go out. Go and enjoy. You need to live. But make sure you prioritize. I did an interview the other day, a TV interview, and the interviewer was asking me, but how do you do this and this and this? And this they want to know question, which is why I titled it Bafunukwaz, the track, right? Mm. And I said, if you prioritize things in terms of service to humanity,
yes,
then everything will have its correct time. So, even with my students, they must prioritize their work because they are a student.
Yeah.
And then when they've prioritized it and they've done due diligence, then they can enjoy the things that go around that. And when they graduate, they will have a bit more freedom. But they must understand that. So now I can be an artist. Now I can be Lex Leo. And it's really exciting. And now I've started a separate Instagram page just for music. Now I'm back to 1,000 followers, you know? And I was like, oh, I feel like
starting
a little kid
again.
And it's like, okay, it's fine. These are my music people. These are my fans. These are the people who I can speak to only as Lex Leo. So that when people follow me for my music, I don't suddenly throw in a smile makeover and people are like, ew, what's that? I'm not about that life. I have my main page and then I've started music. And
because,
it's nice.
Because, you see, again, this is that jack of all trades thing. Like, all of us have many personalities. And I'm not saying you've got multiple personality disorder.
Oh, I might. If I go to a psychiatrist, they might diagnose me as such. I just stay away from them.
But there's also the quiet guy who's sitting at home thinking.
Yeah.
There's also the guy who goes out and has a wild party.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the guy who has, like, this glamorous, exciting life that we all try to put out on Instagram. And then there's the guy who has a very humble, ordinary existence where you're busy serving other people.
Mm.
That kind of thing is, I think, part of a full human being and a full human experience.
Correct.
You can't just be the one. So if you are just the one, I think you have deficiencies.
Another interesting story. After my first year of dentistry, I went for a Baha'i youth conference in Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And I met so many amazing individuals. And I was going through this thing of, there was this one individual who was a movie director, like a really like expressive American movie director, Baha'i guy who we've known for many years, right? Mm-hmm. And he knew me in South Africa and he knew me before I started studying. So, yo, so what did you end up studying? And I'm like, dentistry. He's like, oh my God, not dentistry. And I was like, why not? He's like, but you're so creative. Why did you go into dentistry? And I was like, oh my God, did I do the wrong thing? He's like, you were supposed to go into advertising or marketing. And I was like, oh my God, I chose the wrong thing. And I was like, oh no. And now I was having second thoughts. I was like at the end of first year. And then I met another lady there who was a psychologist. And I was speaking to her about this dilemma. About should I continue with dentistry or shouldn't I not? And then she just said something so simple. And she said, why does it have to be either or? Mm-hmm. And that has always stayed in my mind. Because that's exactly it. It doesn't have to be either or. It just has to be something at a specific time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be an inventor, industrial designer in future. Just when? I don't know. I'll see. I will be, or I am now, an artist. Mm-hmm. And I've been waiting for that. And now it's time to develop that. So everything will have its time.
Are you having fun?
I'm having a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot. I'm having a lot of fun. You know, I get to be a rapper now. It's really weird. I don't want to say I'm a rapper. Yeah, sure. I am a rapper.
Yeah, of course you are.
And it will become official in people's minds, I think, after they see the video. Because I've realized that especially the mass market is still dealing with knowing me visually as Dr. Smile. Mm. And now hearing a hip-hop track.
Yeah.
And people... I've only received positives so far, which I'm really surprised by. Good. But I want to see where is the negative coming from, because it's through that pressure that you grow.
That you improve.
Right. And so the video will introduce Lex Leo visually to everyone. What I'm about, who my friends are, what's my vibe. And then I can start releasing out all the different genres, which I still have a lot of hip hop. I've got Gorm with Tira. I've got electro with Euphonic. I've got some acoustic. I've even started a new genre, which I'm most excited about more than anything else. It's called Afro-Persian.
Oh, wow. So, you've got to be the only guy who's doing that.
Yeah. As far as I know, I'm the only person. And I'm the only artist, Persian-blooded, born in Africa. And why this is important is because it then becomes real. So I only know Farsi because I've been learning it, but I've never been to Iran. Neither can I go now because of the religious political situation, because of the Baha'i faith.
You couldn't go back and just visit?
I can't. I've never been. Neither is it.
You must be curious, though.
I'm very, very curious. And I'd love to go.
I'm not Persian and I want to go.
It's just because of the situation, the religious prejudice at the moment, the Baha'is are put under a lot of pressure in Iran, not afforded human rights, not afforded education. Not one Baha'i youth is afforded access to tertiary education if you're Baha'i, strictly for being Baha'i and believing in these concepts of
Sounds
equality
like apartheid,
and unity.
Huh?
It is apartheid. And we've been, you know, really it's a situation of I'm not going to go to Iran when so many Baha'is are suffering just on holiday. It would be very insensitive to the Baha'is living there. So I would love to go. Mm. But even when I speak Farsi, people like Persians from Iran can tell my accent is different. It's a little bit broken. But
that's
cool.
Nice. So
that's it.
It's like these people who make these fusion dishes, right?
Yeah.
This is what you're doing. You're creating fusion music.
So I'm taking our Niger beats, our Gorm beats, and I'm putting Persian lyrics on. The only thing Persian about it is its lyrical content. And I mix it with English. I've got even one like Persian Zulu
Beautiful.
Mix. And that's going to be released to the world.
You're pretty fluent in Zulu, right? And Tswana.
I am fluent, but I think I'm pretty fluent for the opportunities I've had.
Sure.
So I've never gone to a Zulu or Tswana speaking school. Neither have I had a language course. I'm learning it from my friends from growing up. So I can hear a lot more than I can speak, but I know enough.
Yeah.
I know enough, but I'm enrolling at Wits Language School to do a Zulu course because I've realized...
When do you have time for that?
I have to make the time. But you see, when you realize how vital it is, it's vital if I want to play this role of breaking stereotypes to do it properly.
Yeah.
So I can't just come and say, all this basic Zulu, and it's not enough. It's not enough to bring about the change. When someone has gone to make the effort to learn a language that is not theirs, although I say it's mine because I was born here.
Sure.
That's not theirs. People will understand the change will come in the effort you made, not in the result. So what? You can speak Zulu. So someone was forced to learn it because they grew up on a farm and their housekeeper who was forced to look after them spoke to them in a language that she was comfortable with. I don't think it's the same as someone making an effort to go and learn it.
Absolutely.
It's different things. So that's something I have to do. And even in Bafunukwaz, I've got some Zulu, I've got some Xhosa, I've got some Tswana, because that's who I currently am. I'm a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I will strengthen it, but I'm not going to try to pretend. All the stuff in there, the content and the amount of vernac that I put in there, I can come up with myself. Mm. I can speak. So I'm never going to be put on the spot to be alone. I'm pretending. Why am I pretending? I'm not pretending. That is it. Mm. That's it.
Do you ever have time for relationships, like proper relationships? Because when you're doing all of these things, something has to give, right? There's got to be somewhere where you don't, because you don't. You have 24 hours like everybody else.
Are we speaking romantic or friendship? Or both or what?
Both, because they sometimes overlap.
They do overlap. So I definitely have time for that, and I make time for that. I've got my very close group of friends who I can trust and depend on, which I can count on my two hands.
Right.
And I have a lot of general friends and acquaintances. We know that. And I've recently, probably since the beginning of the year, got into a relationship. And it is with someone who's very similar-minded, also very diverse.
I don't know if you'd find someone similar-minded. It must be some person.
And she's Baha'i, and I've known her for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But we only started recently in a relationship. And mm-hmm. I'm learning what a relationship means, and I'm learning how to give that the time it requires. But it's lovely because that person is in the same spirit of using our time in this world for service.
So does she go with you to some of these things that you do?
Yes, she does. Huh. She has a lot of her own that I go to. Yeah. But she's originally, she was born here, but she's based in Cape Town.
Okay.
And so all of her work is there.
Okay.
So she works in a lot of the communities in Cape Town in the same way that I do. Mm. So there's that commonality. There's not that thing of, why can't you? Why you want to get up so early on Saturday morning? Let's go for breakfast. No, we don't go for breakfast. Let's go and help the kids and let's have breakfast together with them.
Right.
Or it's like this. This is how I use my time. And it's not then foreign. If someone says to me, come over for a... I don't have time to go over for a braai or go to friends for breakfast. I don't have that opportunity. If we're doing a late at night thing, yeah, great. Right, I still socialize. I still have my time.
Sure.
Someone has an 11 o'clock at night braai, I'm there, you know? Mm-hmm. But I've devoted my weekends and my time to service. And that means don't go and do all of those other things or just be really good at time management and learn how to juggle, which is a combination of those two things. And she's very exemplary with the upbringing that she's had and the... the age that she's at to be able to do so much. So I'm very lucky for that. And so now you say, okay, how do you guys envision? Because what is a relationship? For me, it's something that leads to a marriage. And what is the purpose of marriage? Is essentially forming a team to be able to lean on one another through your life's difficulties and grow together and contribute together. Mm-hmm. And many people don't like the idea of marriage. Should we understand? Because they've had very bad examples. I don't think people don't like people don't like religion. People don't like marriage. People, it's because they haven't had a lovely example in front of them, right? If someone says, I don't like this sandwich, it's because you probably gave them like some weird sandwich.
The turd sandwich. Yeah.
Not because sandwiches are bad.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited that if this turns and develops into a marriage, to also use that to break barriers that exist. So I want to take her surname. When is that done?
Wow.
Why? You see, why you say wow? Why do we say wow?
No,
because it is a wow for society.
It's unusual.
But it's silly that it's a wow.
Everything about you is unusual. I shouldn't even be going wow. I should go, that's absolutely
Sitting with one of my groups, one of the groups that I teach on the weekends, comprised of like about eight little girls around 8, 9, 10, 11 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I was speaking to them about what does the equality of genders mean? Yeah. What does equality mean? It means that the same access to rights and opportunities as someone who has a different gender to you.
Yes.
Right? And why are women capable and why we shouldn't let anyone tell us that they are not? Especially now in Women's Month, you know? And I was having this conversation. I said, okay, what do you think is a job for a man? What do you think is a job for a woman? Basic questions. And obviously they gave the stereotypical answers. One's clean and cook and then it's one's work and this. And all of these nonsense things, right? Mm. And then I said, okay, so if you marry a Mr. Nkosi and your surname is Zulu, which surname are you going to take? And they said, Nkosi. I said, why? They said, because that's how it is. I said, but why is that how it is? They said, no, because that's the law. I said, why do you think that is?
Mm-hmm.
You have to help people dissect law and reason for them to rise above it. So that's stupid that has become normal. It's a very like possessive thing, right? And we shouldn't be seen to say, okay, men are possessing women or taking in women. No, this is a mutual joint function adventure, right? So why not take it?
In some ceremonies, they actually say you belong to the man if you're a woman. I mean, it's that blatant.
This is why the world is currently so toxic, and we need new principles. We need new principles to guide us. And so why am I a Baha'i? It's not because I was born into it, because you can't be born into a religion. I don't believe. Well, right? And the Baha'i faith says you can't be born. No, people think they are, but I don't think that's how it works.
I think a lot of people are the religion they are. They are just because they were born.
They are,
into
that's
it.
True. But if you look at it spiritually, you are in charge of your spiritual growth and development and direction and so. And so you have to investigate. You can't just say, I'm Baha'i and not choose to live.
Oh, no. I meet people all the time who say that they are X, Y, and Z. And when I ask them questions about it, they have no answers because they've never interrogated it at
Because
all.
It's harder to interrogate. Because when you interrogate, you have to level up in terms of how you act and behave. And your conscience gets you. But that's growth in this world.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like me saying I'm a dentist. I can't just go, you let me operate in your mouth because I say I'm a dentist?
And we have a responsibility.
And it's even more important in some ways because it's what you believe spiritually will happen to you, what the forces are that can direct you.
Whether you say you believe in God or an energy or a higher power or a something or whatever is the title, because that's not important to me, you should respect that and say, cool, if I do say I'm Baha'i faith says A, B, C, D, well, try my best to do that. And we can spend our whole lives trying, right? And that's why we shouldn't judge another person, because we don't know their pressures, their tests. It is just for us to do our best and serve in the process. So it's really important. Then I said to them, I was speaking about
the gender thing,
new principles. And I said, okay, the Baha'i faith for me has core principles, the unity of humanity, the equality of men and women, the importance of universal education, the realization that whether we say God, Allah, Modimun, Kulunkulu, whatever we say, there's only one source. And that all these different revelations from God have come from the same one source. So when I say revelations, I only believe there's one religion of God, if we want to take the term of religion, which is God guiding us as human beings, right? And he's sent down his purpose for humanity in bite-sized pieces over the years. These bite-sized pieces were
like
known
a bit torrent.
Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, the Baha'i Faith, Hinduism. And these are all bite-sized pieces of God's purpose for us to be able to process at the time that they came. So one religion comes 2,000 years ago, and Jesus Christ brought a religion that said, love thy neighbor. That's a very important principle. And then 500 years later, Prophet Muhammad came, and he said, love thy nation. Because there were nations at that time. There were nations at the time of Jesus Christ. And now Baha'u'llah, who is the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, now comes and says, love humanity as one family.
Right.
Now, poor Jesus Christ must come 2,000 years ago and say to a group of people who are 90% illiterate, say to them, love humanity. People don't know what's humanity. You can only get as far as your donkey can take you or the ship that you climb on takes you. You don't have a concept of a world, one country, one unity. You don't have that concept.
Absolutely.
So it's not that Jesus...
people didn't look at each other as being of the same family. They were like very tribal.
And now we can understand that we can be one family. So now it's time for that principle. Still, when women in West Saudi were only allowed to start driving now. Now is the time, this principle of the equality of men and women. 100 years ago, 200 years ago, so the last revelation from God was Islam, was just 1,500 years ago, which came to warring tribes of Arabia that just did what they want all the time. And now you're trying to bring a concept of equality of genders when they'd kill a daughter if they had one because men were, it's like, what did you expect? Now is time for it.
Now
it's time for understanding.
But you know what? So I mean, like you and I could sit here and talk about this stuff forever, but a lot of people get very emotional and sensitive about discussing these things as just mere concepts because they feel it is their identity. Without it, they don't have an identity. So you have to be very gentle about having these conversations with some people because they immediately see it as a threat.
Yes.
They don't see it as, let's talk it through. I want to know how you feel about these things. I want to figure out why you believe that, what you think is valuable here, what you think we could learn from that. You know, useful stuff. Curiosity. If nothing else, curiosity. But a lot of people immediately assume your purpose is to mock, ridicule, break down, destroy.
Correct, because that has been society.
Yes.
What does society do to people's opinions? They bash them. Mm. What does society do to diversity
but
of religion?
It also puts everything into either right or wrong.
Correct.
It doesn't give any middle ground. And we all know that when you talk about things that we cannot scientifically prove, it's somewhere in the gray.
Correct.
Right? It can't be black or white.
Yes.
It has to be somewhere in the gray.
And black and white was invented by humanity anyway, the colors.
Exactly.
So now we limit ourselves. But when you say right or wrong, let's look at Jesus Christ, Prophet Muhammad, and Baha'u'llah. They all said, love thy neighbor, then love thy nation, then love humanity. Mm. Who's right? All of them.
Mm.
Who's wrong? None of them. Now, why cannot these revelations from God be seen to be feeding into one another as a progressive growth?
Well,
why not?
Because we're tribal. Because that's what people go, well, that was it. You know, 2,000 years ago, a whole bunch of people decided, that's the final stuff. We don't need to
add anything. Well, I think then we're going to be brought to our knees as humanity until we realize it the hard way.
Well, thank goodness there are people like you going out there and doing good work.
Trying.
And I'm not I don't mean that in some glib way either, because I've seen you do it. I know that this really matters to you, and you're doing it by example. You're not just saying it. Mm. Politicians say things.
Mm.
They don't very often get involved and get their hands dirty. I mean, there's nothing worse than digging around in someone's mouth, if you ask me.
You know what's interesting? Even this concept of saying, you know, we use this concept, getting your hands dirty.
Yeah.
When you go into and do this work.
Well, it means you're planting the trees. It means you're digging the channels.
It's so interesting that even a normal language, we associate, for example, that type of work.
Hmm. It's agrarian. It's beneath
with
us.
Dirty.
That's bad.
As in fact, if anything, you're cleaning your hands and purifying, just going and doing that type of stuff. So this is the interesting.
Well, I mean, ironically, there are so many evolved people who take such pleasure in planting a garden.
Mm.
You know,
beautiful.
It's their pride and joy. So getting your hands dirty, I certainly don't mean as some
I know.
But it means for a lot of people getting out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And too many people are just, you said it right at the beginning of this discussion, they're in their place of luxury and comfort. Why would they leave it?
Mm.
Well, you have to leave it in order to figure out who you are. Right? I mean, I'm still blown away by all the things you are. And I do think we must have you back here and talk some more about this stuff. I'd love to meet the people who you work with. I'd love to meet these friends of yours. I want to hear what your environment consists of on a day, week, and monthly basis, because it sounds to me like a fascinating place to be.
Well, you're welcome to come along with me anytime. And
dude,
once,
I know.
We'll come to studio.
You know, if I did leave my comfort zone more often, I would be willing to. But I'm really impressed with the music career that's just launched. I mean, you've been doing this since 2012. Let's not mess around.
Yeah.
But it's starting
it's been
to...
idea, and then...
It's reaching...
Formally since now 2016, really.
And
that
it's
I started
reached a
recording.
Point where it's ready to go in a
yeah,
big direction.
Now it's ready
I'm
to go.
Very happy for you, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's really
Dad.
A pleasure to spend time with
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lex Leo, everybody, if you know him as as the doctor, Dr. Rouhani, do you still practice under that
yeah.
name? Is it Alexander
Dr. Rouhani, although Dr. Smile is really taking it over.
Right.
Talking about that, Instagram.
Yes.
My music page mm-hmm. is Lex Leo Music.
Great.
On Instagram, on YouTube, SoundCloud, everywhere is Lex Leo Music. Facebook, Lex Leo Music. So, and Bafunukwaz is available everywhere. I've still left it for free download on my website on lexleomusic.com. But you can get it on iTunes, on Spotify, on Deezer, on Google Play, on everywhere. And then my main page is Lex Leo Dr. Smile.
Thank you very much, man.
Nice love.
Keep doing the good work. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.